What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast running quicker than Connor Chaplin towards the end of the season. Coming up, the late, late show in the championship title race, fostering, generally a short-term arrangement, Foster Ian, ditto. The big one in League One was 1-1 but finished 2-2, and who will bid adieu to League Two? Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And after a short sojourn, we're back in your ears to talk everything Football League. Hope you're well. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams. I'm joined today, as ever, by Sam Parkin. How are you doing, Sam?
Very good, Matt. How are you doing?
Yeah, fairly well, I've got to say. Adrian Clark's back with us too. How are you holding up throughout this mammoth Easter holiday, Clark?
Yeah, good to get the band back together. It's been a while, hasn't it? Yeah, the Easter holidays are dragging on now. I just want them over. Had a nice break, and now I'm trying to combine work and parenting, which isn't great. It's not going that well, I've got to say.
Yeah, we're all spinning plates and some of them are smashing. But hey, we get a little breather now to talk to you about football for a little bit, which we enjoy. Before we do that, let me remind you that our friends at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers at sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided. It's 18 plus. And remember, always gamble responsibly. All right, I thought we'd have a little opening gambit before we get into the pod properly. And I wonder, what's the latest you've ever left it to successfully achieve something? This is after those late goals from the top three in the championship on Easter Monday. Sam, what have you got for me?
Oh, it's getting harder and harder to think up an answer to these questions. I've got to say, probably one for the kids here, how not to attack your education. But probably my GCSEs and walking to school. I used to get the bus, but probably tactically walked during my GCSEs so I could go with my notepad and read some notes on the way into my history exam. Get in there, get in the gymnasium, get me C, move on to the next one the following day.
And look what a fantastically educated man you've become.
Same notebook you use for the footy, mate.
Do you know what? It's been consistent over the years, Clarkie. I've always loved the pen. I've always loved the notepad. I've always loved scribbling down a result. So preparing for a podcast with you guys is the way it's always been. Not a problem.
All right. That's good to hear. I'm a Google Docs guy these days. How about you, Clarkie? When did you last leave it late but pull it out the bag?
Well, I left it late to meet Santa. It took me 49 years, which is, I thought that was quite a successful achievement. I dreamt about it as a kid. Never happened for me, but I did get to meet him sort of at the back end of last year. So that was pretty cool. But no, it's similar lines to Sam. But this one, I mean, it sounds like bragging, and it is a brag, but I'm going to say it anyway. I took A-levels while the other lads at Arsenal did like a B-tech in recreation and leisure every Wednesday. But I still had to take the exam. And at the end of the 2-year course, they said, look, you've got to take the exam. So I just revised the night before from my mate, Nicky Russ notes. And I got the top score. I don't think any of the other lads were bothered at all. But I felt quite proud of myself. But it was bad because the guy who was in charge of it, the youth development officer, absolutely battered the rest of the youth team. So he's like, he didn't even go to any lessons and he's beat you lot. That's a disgrace. So yeah, I wasn't very popular in that dressing room for a week or two because I made them look a bit bad, but goodness me, it's a piece of piss.
All right, two eggheads alongside me then. I'm not going to continue that theme. Mine is every week. I always wait until I hear the burp, burp, burp of the bin lorry reversing down our drive and think, I've got to put the bins out. Leg it, do it. But the sense of achievement when you just catch him. Thanks, lads. Yeah, I knew you were coming. It's fine.
Yeah, that's a good one. I've been there, mate, most Mondays. Yeah,
it makes me feel like Kieran McKenna. Speaking of which, let's get into that championship title race first of all today. So all of the top three won on Easter Monday. We'll start with Ipswich. They're top by a point from Leeds, two ahead of Leicester. Though the Foxes do have a game in hand on the other two. They beat Blackburn 1-0 at Ewood on Good Friday, did Ipswich, before another thrilling come-from-behind win against Southampton on Easter Monday. How do they keep doing this, Adrian? I mean, it's probably not sustainable, is it? But it surely speaks to the team spirit that Kieran McKenna's engendered there, if nothing else.
Well, you say it's not sustainable. They're doing a pretty good job. And they're on an amazing run, aren't they, of wins. Obviously, just with that Cardiff defeat sort of in the middle of it. They were pretty much outclassed for a lot of the game against Southampton. They're not a sophisticated team as Southampton, who slice through them quite easily at times. But what they've got is ridiculous spirit. But what it is also, it's a relentlessness to score goals. And that relentlessness just, it never makes the opposition feel safe. And I think that Southampton never felt safe in the game, and Ipswich just kept going and going and going. And eventually this wore them down. They forced cracks open. And yeah, it's the substitutes coming up trumps for McKenna. Over 20 goals now scored by subs at Ipswich Town. It's just phenomenal, really. I love the goals as well. The Broadhead one, such an early little pass into the corner instinctively. And Sarmiento was one of the best toe pokes of all time, wasn't it? In terms of the way he sort of was off balance and flicked his foot out to toe it in the final couple of seconds. You've got to respect what they're doing. I don't think they're as sophisticated a team as Leeds, Leicester or Southampton. How could they be? They probably haven't got quite as much talent, but they make up for it in other areas, and just feels like they're going to do it.
Yeah, 9 wins from 10 for them now. I think they're the neutrals' favourite, Sam. I wouldn't put you in that category as a former Ipswich player. But, I mean, if they go to Carrow Road this weekend, and what are they going to do, avoid defeat or win that game, do you think? Because their running's pretty tricky, right? They've got Watford at home, but they've also still got to play Middlesbrough, Hull, Coventry and Huddersfield. So all teams with something to play for.
I don't know in terms of what points they need really from this game. I knew that Blackburn away, Southampton at home and Norwich away from home was going to tell us loads. I thought about Ipswich to successfully navigate these last two games as they have has surprised me. And now they go into this game. And if you remember, Norwich really raised their performance levels at Portman Road when they were off it to a degree. They really played well and caused Ipswich loads of problems. So I think there'll be huge motivation for Norwich and their supporters in this game with everything that's at stake. But they're clearly not going away. This ability to come back and take points, 16 points, I think I heard, after the 75th minute, not lost a point after the 75th minute. And Adrian just alluded to that. Ability to change things from the bench, and if you think they started the season with Burns maybe as one of their most important attacking players, obviously injured at the moment, Hurst the centre forward not around, Hutchison being preferred to Broadhead off the left, so three of the front four has changed throughout this season, but they still hurt you the same ways. They hurt you late in games. They hurt you down the left with Leif Davis. What a crazy game he had, obviously involved in more or less absolutely everything in that game after, I think, being ill or having a knock at Blackburn. So for him to recover and play the way he did in this game was remarkable. But it certainly looks like Ipswich are going to be there to the bitter end. And absolutely, they're the neutral's favourite. And it's the story. It's coming up from League One. It's the manager. It's the way that they play, the way that they score. Who would have felt that they'd still be in this position given the way that they've given up goals this season? I think them and Southampton have conceded 51, have they not? Which is incredible when you compare the defensive records of the other two, Leeds and Leicester. So yeah, brilliant story and the game of the season so far, arguably.
Yeah, magnificent stuff it was. Norwich, by the way, 7 wins in a row at Carrow Road, where they haven't lost in the league since November, Saturday lunchtime. That one goes down. It's going to be an incredible occasion. What about Leeds then? 4 points from 2 games for them. Late goals a feature for them too. They needed Matteo Joseph to step off the bench and snatch a point at Watford before Crescencio Somerville's penalty. And Dan James from downtown edged out Hull on Monday night. Still unbeaten at home. What did you make of that penalty incident, Clarkey, in the game against Hull? I mean, it's a non-issue, I suppose, because Somerville scored. But if you're Daniel Farker, that kind of thing must make you a little bit jittery. I'm always surprised when that happens in games and why there isn't just a designated penalty taker.
It wasn't great, was it? It was definitely a penalty. It was a daft challenge from Regan Slater. Hull had played so well. arguably the better side. They were certainly the equal of Leeds. So it was harsh on them, I think, to lose the game 3-1. Leeds looked edgy to me. So with the crowd a little bit. So, you know, that's something to look out for in the running if things aren't going their way. But yeah, I would applaud Joel Peru, really, because to my mind, he is the penalty taker. I've seen him take them before. I think he's the number one. But of course, he didn't start the game. So maybe the designated penalty taker at the start of the game was Somerville. I don't know. So that maybe that's where the confusion lied. But he walked away before things got silly. Yeah, I've been there before, and it's not great when someone's trying to steal the ball off of you. So, yeah, not ideal, but at least he scored it, and massive relief, wasn't there, around the ground. So, yeah, look, Leeds are excellent. They missed Gruev, I think, in the middle. No doubt about that. Poor Patrick Bamford, shocking miss, wasn't it? I don't know how he managed it. I was a little bit surprised it took so long for Pirro to come on, actually. I think, yeah, maybe he'll start the next game. We'll have to wait and see. But, yeah, look, good win for Leeds, but they are under pressure because Ipswich are putting them under it, and obviously with Leicester winning, that limits their breathing space too.
Yeah, so they go to Coventry on Saturday. They got Southampton at home on the last day of the season, Leeds. Sam, psychology in football is something that I'm always fascinated by, and I thought we saw that writ large all over Dan James' face when he walked up to take that penalty for Wales the week before. And I don't think anybody in that country or watching the game thought he was going to score it, because he was pale as a sheet and looked like he wanted to be anywhere else. Then he gets that goal against Hull, and he didn't have to think about it, right? He just had to hit the ball at that time. It was the only time he could take the shot on, and he ends up scoring what looks like a glorious goal.
Yeah, and he's in brilliant form as well. I mean, this has crept up on me a little bit, maybe because we've spoken about Somerville and Nonto and Ruta so frequently this season. I think he's up to 20 goal involvements or something. Three goals in the last five. And over the last 13 games, he's got six goals and three assists. So he's been banging form, really. I thought it was a brilliant goal. I didn't fancy him, actually, when he was breaking down the right side.
He made it look easy, didn't he?
Yeah, maybe as well, because the angle and obviously went with the kind of side foot, the right foot. Really difficult when you're moving. Obviously, he gets there because he's got that ridiculous pace. But yeah, I thought it was an incredible goal to obviously alleviate any pressure. Hull played really well in this game. I thought maybe just that cutting edge. I probably expected a little bit more from the forward players, despite them not having that kind of out and out number nine. They don't seem to go for the jugular too often for all the nice football. And I think that's ultimately where they're probably going to fall short. That combined with obviously the inability to take enough points at home, I think that's probably going to be the reason that they miss out. But for sure, they played well. And you can tell, because at the final whistle of all these big games, think back to Leicester against Hull a few weeks ago, Maresca in Rosinha's ear. And again at the weekend, Farker in Rosinha's ear, basically saying, "You're a really good side and you've pushed us really far," I would imagine. So they're getting loads of plaudits, but it looks like they're going to fall short this season.
Yeah, Mrosinia with the good grace to take that. Whereas I think I'd be tempted to say, "I'll leave it out, mate. I don't need to be patronised by you after we've what about Leicester then? Defeat and a win for them, previously peerless. Clarky, you saw them limp to defeat at Ashton Gate before that win from the much-needed category against Norwich. They were really wasteful, weren't they, at Ashton Gate? Vardy in particular, but he's up to 89 now after scoring against Norwich. But it's hard to work out what's behind this slump, I guess. Have they maybe just switched off a little too soon, thinking that the job was half done?
I think so. I think they just were coasting. I think they could afford to let the standards drop because they were so far ahead. There's no pressure, no edge to any of their games. And they lost form, and now they've got to find it. And find it quickly, and confidence is a little bit low. At Bristol City, they were pretty poor. The centre halves, so important for them, the way they passed through the lines, absolutely awful distribution, kept giving it away. Bristol went man to man, and they did a good job of stealing it. But yeah, it was a really shaky performance, and it was absolutely one paced. Yeah, Vardy missed some chances, and you know he should have buried at least a couple of them. But there was no plan B, and I know that's an old thing with Leicester now. No plan B with Maresca, but it really surprised me. Chasing the game, 1-0 down, they did nothing differently. Absolutely nothing. Wide players still with chalk on their boots. You know, everyone's still knocking the ball around patiently. It's like, come on, do something. You know, mix it up a little bit, make some runs down the centre. But they didn't. Leicester fans gave them pelters at the final whistle, or a number of them did. So well done to the players and the manager and the fans, actually, for sort of regrouping at the King Power. Everyone was together, and it showed a lot of character, I think, to win that game. The main men scored: Dewsbury Hall, Mavididi, Vardy. They've been brilliant all season, and if they do get top two, they'll you know, those three really are probably the standouts, in my opinion, from the campaign. They deserve top two, but they to play the football Maresca demands, you've got to be confident to receive the ball in tight areas, and maybe this win will restore some of that belief.
Again, Sam, their running's not great, is it? I mean, Birmingham, they play this weekend at the King Power. Obviously, they're not clear of trouble themselves. Millwall, Plymouth, you'd say the same about them. West Brom, Southampton, Preston and Blackburn. So they're going to end up doing it the hard way, it looks like.
Yeah, it's difficult because I'd probably still rather play the worst teams in the division, and they've got a few of those coming up. So yeah, they're not daunting on the face of it. I'd expect them to beat Birmingham at home next time out, and obviously Leeds have probably got their trickiest game, albeit Coventry have obviously got a hellish little period coming up for them. I say hellish; they've got a real tough run of games now with Southampton, Leeds, and the FA Cup semi-final. So yeah, and obviously, you know, with Norwich playing Ipswich, it could all change again this weekend. I think Leicester could be in a commanding position again after next weekend. So we'll see how they go. I think just having the full complement back all of a sudden, and you could argue kind of Vardy for Daka from the off, or maybe Justin for Doyle at left back, but to have the midfield three, I think their first kind of game together was at Chelsea that we saw, Matt, since Ndidi's recovered. But to have Ricardo Pereira available and back in the 11 as well, the aforementioned wingers that Clarkey just spoke of, they're all back now, and I could see that kind of confidence coming back into the side at the weekend. That said, I feel that undercurrent with Maresca and the supporters when he speaks after the game. Everything is not rosy there. I don't think that, obviously, the supporters have been fully enamoured with the football. That's an understatement at times this season. And I think Maresca is a little bit prickly after the game. So that will go some way to kind of mending that relationship, and if they can kick on against Birmingham, then I'm with Clarkey. I can't kind of go back on what my sentiment's been over the last month. I still believe they've got the quality in that 11 and in that squad to get the job done.
Might be tricky for them next season. They're reporting an £89.7 million loss this week. If they do go up, they might start on minus points. And let's flip to the other end of the Championship then. Rotherham kept themselves alive for a bit longer by beating Millwall, but still looks like a matter of when, not if, for them. Plymouth, only a point and a place above the relegation zone. That was enough for the powers that be to decide to ditch Ian Foster after just 3 months at the helm. Sam thought that this was a Warnock job. I think Warnock thought that too as well. He would have taken it had he been offered, but he hasn't. Here's what the club say. Director of Football Neil Dewsnip, supported by first team coach Kevin Nansekevel, possibly, will take charge for the remainder of the season, with Simon Ireland and Daryl Flahaven continuing in their respective roles. Strange one that, Sam, isn't it? Because they've pressed the panic button. Obviously, they didn't like what they saw from Ian Foster, but to not have somebody lined up to take the place and think that people still working in the club will have the knowledge to get them out of the situation that they're in is a big old gamble.
It is a bit odd, yeah. I wonder if... we don't know what Neil Warnock's relationship is with people at the club, and I've read that maybe there's somebody he doesn't see eye to eye with there. So maybe that's something as to why they haven't gone for him. And also, he's been up at Aberdeen, and it was a pretty desperate period, I think, for him and Aberdeen. So yeah, but just because he lives down in that area, I think people probably looked at it and thought that it was an obvious option for them. I think Dewsnip appointed Ian Foster. So to have him back at the helm, which he was for a few games. I remember seeing them at St. Mary's and they played reasonably well, but they actually parked the bus to a degree, which is not something I've seen from Argyle. And the criticism probably of Ian Foster is that they've probably been a bit too defensively minded in comparison to how they were under Stephen Schumacher. But I think there's a lot of ingredients as to why Argyle have slipped. I think the loss of Finn Azaz is huge. I think that they've become so over-reliant on Morgan Whittaker and Ryan Hardy. And if they're not playing open, expansive stuff, then it's probably difficult to fashion chances for those guys and for them to remain so consistent. So I think Finn Azaz, to a lesser extent, Luke Cundall, who joined Schumacher at Stoke on loan from Wolves, I think that's been an issue. And not replacing that creative spark, going for young players that Ian Foster obviously knew from the England setup, and it's not been a match for what they were previously. So I called it maybe a month ago that I felt Argyle were going to slip. Kind of said it reluctantly because I feel their games are actually okay. They've got some winnable fixtures to go, but they're right in it now. And my hunch says that they're going to do desperately well to stay in the division now.
Just not enough goals, Clarkie, have they? Failed to score in five of their last eight games. So that seems like an obvious problem. But what for Ian Foster next?
Yeah, five home games without a goal. I mean, that's going to get the fans' backs up, isn't it? So no wonder they were grisly. Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, it's been the sort of annus horribilis or whatever it is for Foster, because he was with Al Ettifaq, wasn't he, with Steven Gerrard, and they couldn't win a game. So then he ditches that for here, and yeah, it's gone badly. I mean, he was a highly regarded coach, wasn't he, within the FA? I think Neil Jusnip worked at the FA for quite a while, so that would have been a very awkward conversation, I suspect, and it would have been taken quite reluctantly. Maybe the powers that be just made the call, didn't they? Director of football probably just had to deliver the news. So, who knows? I mean, maybe go back to development coaching somewhere. He clearly knows the game, but... But yeah, for whatever reason, the players didn't seem to buy into what he was saying. I agree with Sam though. I think Azaz was a massive player, and when you've got Hardy and in particular Whittaker, you've got to get the ball to them. They're your best players. They're the difference makers. It's no good if they're getting 10 touches a half, is it? You've got to be on the front foot and play to your strengths. And maybe he was too cautious.
What about Huddersfield, Adrian? I mean, they are just a point behind Plymouth. They're third bottom at the moment. They just draw too many games, right? 16 so far this season, and 12, 1-1, the latest at Stoke on Monday. It's the easiest thing in the world to say, isn't it? But if even two or three of those have been converted into wins, they'd probably be out of it by now.
Yeah, probably. They just don't have enough goal scorers, do they, in the team? I think they've been fighting it throughout this season. What they've got, though, they've got three massive six-pointers at home. They've got Millwall, Birmingham and Swansea at the John Smiths. And I think they need 7 to 9 points from those three games, and then they've got a chance. Yeah, lose those games, and I think they're toast, really, Huddersfield. So, look, Brighton Wrighters come in, injected a bit of energy into the tactics, but, are the players equipped to go for 90 minutes playing the sort of aggressive pressing game that he wants them to do? The signs suggest no. They're putting together good patches, good 20 minutes, good half an hour, but they can't seem to sustain it. I think they'll go.
Wow, okay. No wins in six for them. Sam, you've been backing Danny Roll all season. Sheffield Wednesday on 39 points, but they're four without a win. They've lost three of those. Drew at home to Swansea, lost at Borough over Easter. And they've got to go to QPR on Saturday, where they'll face the awesome goal-scoring power of, checks notes, Steve Cook. Are they going to be able to handle him?
How has he been given the first goal now against Birmingham?
This is true.
It's very odd, isn't it? Because even from the first angle, you can see it's going a couple of yards wide. We love Cookie, don't we? We had him on the podcast, didn't we, a couple of years ago before a playoff campaign, I believe it was, when he was at Bournemouth. Brilliant fella. Gave us loads of time and good stuff. And he's one of those players you can't not love when he's on the pitch as well. Like a real leader, defends of his life. And yeah, he started popping up with some goals as well. And Jimmy Dunn, maybe the finest goal of the weekend on Friday, his left foot volley. So yeah, all of a sudden, this is a massive game. It was always going to be a huge game. QPR look like they're going to stay up and stay up by a distance the way that they're performing. The performance levels were good. Maybe weren't getting the points that they deserved. They've got that in the last couple of games. Sheffield Wednesday, I think, is between them and Huddersfield. I think Argyle will probably go now. There's my kind of wild prediction, if it's wild enough at this stage. But I think Argyle will probably go. So I think it's between Huddersfield and Sheffield Wednesday. I think Huddersfield marginally have the better games. And I think Sheffield Wednesday have probably just been derailed a little bit by, I think, an injury to Pervada. Ogbo's not scored in five. I think those two were a big reason for that. That period where they were playing well and getting points on the board as well. So we'll see how they go. What is a little bit alarming is the level of the performance, obviously, at Ipswich and at Middlesbrough, where Danny Rowell, not so much after Ipswich, but he was pretty scathing at the weekend. So we'll see what the reaction is, because that's the first time I'd heard him kind of call out the players and say, listen, we are down unless that performance level improve. So yeah, big one at the weekend.
I did it before. I remember I commentated on a game at Hillsborough, the game after they'd been battered by someone really embarrassingly, I can't remember, sort of January, February time, and I just thought, well, if they play like that, they're going to finish right at the bottom. But they did respond, and because the fans love Danny Rowell so much, I do think that connection at Hillsborough might be worth a few points between now and the end of the season. We'll have to see whether the team's good enough. I don't know, but they have turned it around once or twice before, is what I'm saying. So it's not too late.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, that was the Championship. We're going to go to League One next. On Tuesday night, the top two met on the South Coast. It finished Portsmouth 2, Derby 2. I mean, fairly satisfactory for both, Sam, I suppose, but Derby might be a bit rueful given that they were twice in front in this game. Four absolutely sensational goals in it.
Yeah, really good game. I think, obviously, I don't know, I was going to say Bolton probably the big winners here, but they probably would have preferred Portsmouth to win, actually, wouldn't they? So they could have been a little bit closer to Derby for the run-in. It looked like, you know, Derby, I think Paul Warne said as much, had recognised that the right-hand side warred up against Ogilvie, or in behind Ogilvie, could get a little bit of joy. That's where his two goals came from. Brilliant to see Moxon getting his first goal for Pompey. Loved his little bit of quick feet just before he released his strike. Obviously, a player brought in mid-season to help cope with all the injuries they've had in that department. And there's a little bit of a battle between him and Lee Evans for that starting berth alongside Marlon Pack. But yeah, it feels like, yeah, Portsmouth are nearly there now. Andrew back, I thought, was a bit of a surprise to see as well. I think there was a potential penalty on him late on. But yeah, it looked like a really good game, and looked like Derby had kind of declared that 2-1 had just dropped off, where they're a little bit more on the front foot in the first half. And that's dangerous against a team with the quality of Portsmouth. So Portsmouth were almost there, but they got tough games. They go to Bolton, and they go to Lincoln. But I think there's enough in those home games to get it done and be champions as well.
Yeah, so they're, what, 9 points clear of third Bolton. They've both played 41. Derby have played a game more. Bolton needed that win against Reading, didn't they, Clarkey? 5-2, a big victory as well. But just to keep Derby honest as much as anything else, they're still in it. If they win that game in hand, I suppose, will be the key factor.
Yeah, they'll see themselves as still being in it for sure. I think it's probably a good point. They'll take the point, Derby County, won't they? It's a tough old fixture, under the lights, great atmosphere. Yeah, they unveiled a new mural, didn't they? I think Pompey as well. It was a really good occasion. And Derby, I think, acquitted themselves pretty well. So that'll give them confidence. But yeah, Bolton are capable, aren't they, of steamrolling any team. I think, you know, that's the fifth time they've scored four or more goals in a game this season, when they battered Reading 5-2. This time it's a hat-trick from Collins. Obviously, they've had to, you know, juggle their forward line in recent weeks because of injuries, which isn't ideal, but they're knocking on the door. And yeah, you know, I've been a big fan of Bolton all season. It does feel as if that one or two of those sort of lax surprise, you know, defeats and draws might come back to bite them now, because Derby under Warne look pretty consistent.
Yeah, I guess in Bolton's favour, three of their remaining five at home, and they haven't lost in the league at the tough sheet this year. League One adjacent, Clarkie, is the Football League Trophy Final, which you will be in attendance at our National Stadium this Sunday. It's Peterborough against Wickham. It's not a distraction for Peterborough, is it? But for Wickham, this is the big day out. And does that give them the edge that this is sort of their season?
Yeah, it's a season saver, isn't it, for Wickham? It's they've done ever so well to get here, because it's not been a good season for them particularly. It's petered out, very much mid-table now. So yeah, they can. It's a free hit for them. They'll be the underdogs going into the game, and yeah, they've done okay at Wembley before. I do fancy Posh though, I've got to say. I just think they've got some real talents, some big game players, some players that will love the big Wembley pitch. You know, that lovely surface. You know, that they can knock the ball around on. I'm thinking that, you know, Edwards at the back, and you've got players coming into midfield, the fullbacks flying forward, Efron, Mason Clark and Poku in and around Ricky J. Jones. I just think they've got too many match winners that are going to revel in the Wembley showpiece event. That's my sort of feeling ahead of kickoff. So I do make Peterborough favourites, but it should be a really, really interesting game. Yeah, doing commentary for TalkSport, and Adrian Durham's the presenter. He's obviously a massive Peterborough fan. Joe Shannon's the commentator. He's a huge Wickham fan. So I'm there to sort of balance it out and be the neutral. So we'll see. May the best team win.
Yeah, should be good fun, that. Neither of those two worried about relegation. I'm wondering, Sam, where are we drawing the line of safety now? I'm just looking at the League One table. So Exeter have got 51 points. I guess we'd say that they're safe. Charlton, given the form that they've been in on 47, might feel the same. 8 points clear of third bottom Port Vale. But if you're Shrewsbury, Cambridge, Wigan, Burton, you're still worrying, right? And Reading in particular had one back-to-back games before that Bolton drubbing, but they got Lincoln on Saturday, then three straight away. So Port Vale will be thinking they can overturn them.
Yeah, I'd 100% agree with that. Yeah, Charlton haven't lost in 10 games. Seven of those have been draws, but I'd be astonished if Charlton got drawn back into that. Shrewsbury, the form's not brilliant. Three wins in 12. Lot of low-margin games, as you would anticipate with them. Nothing's really changed under the new manager. Unbeaten in three really tight games currently. Cambridge, obviously the big winners, weren't they, over Easter? Two astonishing victories for them over Barnsley and Wigan. I don't know. I think Reading have probably got too much quality. I can't go back on what I've been saying on podcasts the last fortnight or so, despite all the problems. I think they've got decent players. So, yeah, in my mind, yeah, although Shrewsbury, Reading and Cambridge can't switch off and still need some more points, I think it's probably going to be four from the bottom five. And all those teams down there have shown flashes, haven't they, over the last few months? I mean, Fleetwood have become, you know, much harder to beat, I would say, under Charlie Allen. That collapse against Oxford was not in keeping with what they've been under him. They've been in loads of tight games. I can't remember them being beaten by multiple goals in many a week. So they've improved. It's obviously the goal scoring that's letting them down at the minute, and it's probably going to be too tough an ask now with that 4-point deficit to Cheltenham, five to Port Vale. I think they've probably left it too little too late.
Cheltenham will feel they've got a good chance, though, won't they, Clarkie? Because they've got two games in hand on Burton, for example, but they're coming from such a long way back after that miserable start to the season where they didn't score for about 6 months. That would be an incredible one. Do you think the bottom four as is the bottom four that will be at the end of 46 games, or is it Burton, Reading, Cambridge, one of those going to drop him?
I think Burton have got no momentum, have they? They every now and again, they nick an important win, sometimes away from home as well, Burton, but not striking you with that much confidence, are they? A lot of home defeats. I think Cheltenham have got life in them. Obviously, it was a crushing blow on Monday when they took the lead against Exeter and then gave it up, and then they conceded a pen in injury time and lost the game. So that was a real blow for them. They won the big one, didn't they, at Fleetwood 2-1 on Good Friday. So then that will hold them in good stead. If the season had started in, what, October, November, they'd be nowhere near it, would they? So you'd say they're the best team down there, really, aside from Reading, who I agree with Sam, they shouldn't really be there. So, no, I think Cheltenham have got a chance. My feeling is that Burton might get drawn in with Port Vale, Fleetwood and Rock Bottom, Carlisle.
All right, we'll play the tape back after the last games of the season and see who's right. We're going to go to League Two next. We spent a lot of time last few weeks focusing on the race for promotion, so I thought we'd turn our attention to what's happening at the bottom of the fourth tier. What a win that was, Clarkie, for Forest Green. 3-0 away to Crewe. They're a difficult team to predict, aren't they? But there's no doubt that Steve Cottrell's made an impact there.
Yeah, Crewe have hit the wall, haven't they? They were on for automatics and they've had the worst run of the season at the worst possible time. Yes, it was a shocking sort of 15, 20-minute period in the game where Forest Green just ripped them apart and one great goal on the counter. I think it was a set-piece goal in there as well. Yeah, the goalie was good in the second half. I'm known from Norwich, Vicente Reyes, only 20. So he played his part and he's relatively new to the team. But yeah, it's... I think they'd lost three in a row, hadn't they, after a bit of a turnaround under Cottrell. So this was a massive win for them. They've actually got 16 points from their last 12, which is kind of lower mid-table for them, really. So, it's just is time running out on them. You know, they're a miles better team right now than they were in League One last year, than they were earlier on this season, certainly than they were under Troy Deeney. But Sutton and Colchester are getting better as well, aren't they? And that's the problem for them.
The problem also is I've just looked at their fixture list and audibly gasped. Sorry if you heard that, listener. Milton Keynes Dons at home, away to Mansfield, away to Wrexham. Next three.
Nah. They'll do well to get 3 points from those three games, that's for sure.
So Colchester, Sutton and Grimsby will be licking their lips then, Sam. Are we saying it's two from those four? And how have you rated what Danny Cowley's done at Colchester thus far? They are a point from safety as it stands, but they have three games in hand on Sutton, who are the team above them.
I think it's my favourite thing across all three divisions at the moment that they've had 6-1-1 draws in the last eight games. I mean, that's just ridiculous. So he's good at getting 1-1s. I saw them at Mansfield. They're in a false position, Colchester, I think. They've got a few issues, that said. I mean, they've got two midfield players playing in the back three at the weekend, they did. Ellis Iandolo, who obviously I watched a lot at Swindon, and Jay Mingy, who scored the winning goal against Newport recently. He's a midfield player playing right-sided centre-half. Samson Tavide, the young centre-forward, has come back, which everyone was really enthused about, him being, you know, an additional goal threat. And now he's got an issue with, I think it's the ankle or the foot that he had the operation with. So he may be missing now. So there's a few things wrangling on in the background. But I think looking at the games, as I have done this morning, it's absolutely two from four. Grimsby are in there now, having been pegged back by, I think, a last-minute Bradford penalty on Monday, the early game. So last-minute. Stop them from getting maximum points there. But yeah, Grimsby are in it. I think Forest Green Rovers, because of those games, are looking at snookers now. It's going to be too difficult for them. I think Sutton need to win two of their four to give themselves a chance. They've got two winnable games, two pretty horrendous fixtures. And therefore, it's, I believe, between Colchester and Grimsby to accumulate those points just to stave off Sutton, basically. And I think that Colchester have got enough winnable games and they've obviously got this backlog to probably get enough points. And that's my sentiment with Grimsby as well. So I think that it's going to be a hell of a battle, but I think that Sutton, again, have probably just left it too late to get enough points to get above those two.
Grimsby go to Colchester, don't they? 16th of April. That feels a little bit massive. They got a guaranteed 3 points at home to Swindon, though, haven't they, Sam?
I mean, I fancy them. I think like 3-0 down, weren't they, at Sutton the other day? I think they scored last minute Swindon, but it's desperate times there. And if the season was going on another dozen games, Swindon would be in this conversation as well that we're just having, sadly.
Yeah, you could probably put Salford in that as well. Only 47 points from 42 games from them. What a stinker of a season. That is given the level of investment. But we're saying that they're out of it and it's between Grimsby, Sutton, Colchester and FGR. All right, we are nearly done for today. Let me remind you about the offer from our friends at Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers at sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. You can follow us on X at AFL What The and on TikTok and Instagram at What The EFL. If you'd like to leave us some nice words on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, that would be appreciated too. You didn't think we were quite done there, though, did you? You know I've got a tweet of the week, and this one, I mean, it's a curveball. Let's just say that. All Leeds, all caps, aren't we? 3! At LUFC, at Square Ball. So far, so standard. Until I tell you, listener, that this comes from Henry Winkler, a.k.a. the Fonz. I mean, I'm sure he was a Spurs fan a couple of months ago. Didn't he send Ange Postecoglou a video message? You sometimes wonder if there's legitimacy in these American celebrities and their supposed football supportership. But what do you make of this one, Sam? Is this cool from the Fonz or has he jumped the shark?
I know you'll have scrolled down and got a little bit of extra knowledge here. Daughter-in-law born in Leeds.
Said it was a must.
Yeah. There you go. So it's in the family. I'm enjoying all of it. Mostly, I'm enjoying that it's a signed shirt that he's got on. Just trying to make out a few of the signatures there. No idea, but yeah, I'm enjoying it. He's tagged in Square Ball as well. Square Ball,
the Square Ball. Yes. Who say? Did you mean to tag us in there?
Really, did they?
It's an Irish GAA-inspired fashion brand. So I'm going to go ahead and say that he didn't mean to take them in there.
Well,
that's thrown me because I presumed I was going to click on it and it was going to be like a Leeds podcast.
Well, there is a website. It is a Leeds podcast, I think.
Yeah, it's a fanzine and podcast and he's just tagged in the wrong account.
Yeah, so basically the Fonz's son is a Hollywood director, Max Winkler, and he's a Leeds fan. So maybe he's, so that's the connection by the sounds of it. So yeah, he's obviously remembered that and tagged him in. But oh, look, it doesn't get much cooler, does it, than having the Fonz as one of your celeb fans. I'd love it if he was an Arsenal fan. I'd definitely get him on our show. Superb.
Max Winkler ought to be a porn director, by the way, with a name like that.
Maybe he is, I don't know. He didn't say, doesn't specify. They do that in Hollywood, I believe.
I think reply of the day goes to Dan Mitchinson, who says, strange question, Mr. Winkler, but I'm a fan of furniture and architecture, and wondered if you could tell me the style/name of the couch in this picture. Thanks. Not really what we're here for, Dan. Although Fred Sanford, a.k.a. Gaslit and Confused, says it's a late 70s porno style couch that is coming back in style for nerds with happy days money. There is always somebody on Twitter/X to make you feel bad about what you post. But well done to the Fonz and good luck to Leeds for the rest of the season. He'll be marching all the way to Elland Road, I'm sure, should they get promoted. That's going to bring this episode of What the EFL to a close. My thanks to Sam and to Adrian and to you for joining us for it. We'll be back with another one next week. Bye for now.